That is not the sound of the giveaway. That is the sound of Scott Washington entering the room, our local resident historian with History Matters This Week in History. How are you?
Doing good. How about yourself?
I am doing okay.
This is that week of Declaration of Independence and all kind of fun stuff. We have aliens. We have circus people. It's just chock full of really interesting things this week.
That is absolutely true. All right, so this week in history, we're covering Monday the 3rd through Sunday the 9th. Is
9th,
that what? Man,
that's it.
July is just flying by, isn't it?
Yeah. It's amazing.
Seems like this week hasn't dragged on forever. Okay, so
it is, but
that's just me.
July.
It's fine. It's fine.
This happens to everybody. Yeah. Happening in the middle of the week, Tuesday, there's a kind of a lurch in you thinking, okay, there's a holiday, and then suddenly you're back in regular time again, and it doesn't seem quite right.
I would say it doesn't seem quite right.
We should just take the whole week off. I think that would be
fairly accurate.
Precedent.
All right, so this week in history, what do we got?
All right, well, I think probably the big one is July 3rd of 1776 is when Congress begins debating the final language of the Declaration of Independence.
Having already declared independence on the 2nd.
The 2nd,
right?
That's right. That's when movement to do that is passed, and then the 4th is, of course, when that language is solidified. But unlike the common ideas that it's signed then, it's not. It's August 2nd. Yes. Maybe we should have another kind of celebration.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
But the 4th is when they finalize the language. That's when the directions are to send it to the printer. It goes to John Dunlap. He prints a copy, copies with just John Hancock's name on it and the secretary. And that copy of that goes to George Washington, who's out in the field in New York. And on July 9th, actually, he, in the orders of the day, orders that this copy be read to the troops so they know what they're fighting for. I mean, that's just profound.
And it's really fascinating that it's sent to George Washington, who's out there in the field, at war. This Revolutionary War has been going on for a year or two at this point.
That's
before
July 1775, 4th, 1776. We have, of course, Lexington and Concord.
Right.
So, and, of course, down here in North Carolina, they'd say, well, it's been going on since 1771.
And the Boston Massacre is when?
That's 1770.
Yeah.
So
this has been brewing for a while, I think it's fair to say that July 4th, 1776 had a real good PR firm, because there are a lot of days that could potentially lay claim to being the day
that's
of declaring
right.
independence, but that's the day that we hit on.
Well, you know, Hillsborough did a great thing on July 2nd this year in conjunction with the Music Maker Foundation. They had not only music, but they had a number of people read portions of the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
All ages, gender, handicapping conditions, nationality, races. It was truly wonderful. I got to be a part of that, and it brought it alive, especially when you know in Hillsborough that there is a street named King Street that was named after King George III in his lifetime.
And
if you really want a taste of George Washington, you can go down to Hillsborough. There was a house that was up in Caswell County just before you got into Danville, the Gatewood property. And in 1781, George Washington, in this epic 1,700-mile journey, stopped there overnight. It's documented in his diary. Mm-hmm. And then in 1978, James Freeland, the Walt Disney of Hillsborough, who invented, of course, the Daniel Boone Village, heard about it, a great enthusiast of history, who helped build over 700 houses for people of modest means. And he actually was a great kid at heart, too. And he actually moves, he gets permission from the Gatewood family to move this house, lock, stock, and barrel. By 1978, the last tenants had moved out. It did not have electricity or running water. They move it down to Hillsborough.
1978.
And, so there it is, right near the Churton Car Wash, named after William Churton, the fellow who laid out the town in 1754.
There you go. And that house is Mexican restaurant.
That's right. It's called
now.
Pueblo
so if you want
Viejo.
A taste of George Washington, it tastes like burritos
that's right.
and
you
chips
go,
oh, and salsa.
That's right.
Hey,
just like I'm sure. And the thing is, when you go in, the ceilings are tall. But you do have a little feeling of like, this is where George Washington may have been. And, well, he was, and which is a great thing to know.
That's really cool. So, I mean, Hillsborough does the Declaration of Independence reading. Yes. Carrboro does the Frederick Douglass reading.
That's right.
On the 4th, a reading of What to the Slave is the 4th of July, which is the 1852 address that Frederick Douglass delivered. So I think all towns
stuff.
Do a really good job that's recognizing right. the seriousness of the history and the values and the principles that still have yet to
that's
be fulfilled.
Right. Well, you know, and it's nice to know that the United States Virgin Islands celebrates Emancipation Day as the official holiday on July 3rd, because on that date in 1848 is when the Danish governor, Peter von Schlotten, actually abolished slavery, which is a kind of a cool thing to realize that, and it probably gave impetus to what was happening here in the States, certainly the anti-abolition movements, which is a great thing.
Yeah.
So July 4th is there is so many things that happen on July 4th, it's like hard to know where to start. 1960 is when the American flag with 50 stars is officially raised for the first time.
Yep.
The Statue of Liberty arrives and is assembled on Bedloe's Island in New York Harbor in 1884. In 1885, it's dismantled and moved to its present location.
This is an interesting
thing.
Like, let's go back for a second. The Statue of Liberty was built, and then a year later, they took it down and moved it. What was that all
about? Well, and you think, well, did they get everything in the right place? Like, oh, no, that tablet is supposed to be in her hand holding up. Or
no, I don't like the feng shui. Let's turn it around.
That's right. I don't know. That is a fascinating thing. I didn't know that. I was like, whoa, things we learn here.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
The Washington Monument, the cornerstone of that, was laid in 1848.
This has a little bit to do with the fact that we just do historical monuments and we just make July 4th the day that we start all of this. Yeah,
we start and we don't necessarily.
It's sort of artificially historical events.
Well, and here's about Washington again. Mount Rushmore in 1934.
Yes.
His face is completed and dedicated. Now, the entire memorial is completed in 1941, but that's when Washington's face was completed. Like, can you imagine July 4th? Hey, we got his face done.
We got his face done. Everything else is still great. The memorial was never completed. It was stopped in 1941, right? Because that was originally
There
were supposed to be like full length statues, and then Gutzon Borglum, who is a interesting figure in American history, passed away, and then they ran out of money because there's a war on now. So a little bit more of a pressing interest than finishing the rest of the bodies, but
and we don't even think about that.
Oh yeah,
we think of, like, you know, selfies, the close up. This was the stone selfies. of that day, but it's kind of fun to see what had happened here. America the Beautiful, Catherine Lee Bates' poem, is first published in 1895 on July 4th. Now, how can you imagine having, you know, all these wonderful things without America the Beautiful?
Yeah.
That's a great great song, great poem. So anyways, those are some of the cool things that I think happen on July 4th. George Coem is born.
Maybe.
A Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yeah.
Also, James Bailey. This is the fellow who's
Barnum and Bailey.
Right,
yes,
and Barnum is born this week, too, which I was fascinated to think about going,
George Cohan, probably July 3rd, actually,
yes,
for the birthday.
Right.
Like, he sings about being born on the 4th of
July.
Right,
that's right.
That might be a fake birthday. Bailey, ironically, because the guy who's associated with Barnum, this is actually his birthday.
That's right.
Yeah,
my brother was born on July 3rd, but I was very happy to learn that there was still something happening on July 3rd.
There's stuff happening on the 3rd as well.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah.
The Lost Colony debuted on July 4th, 1937. It was only supposed to last one season, and it's the longest-running theatrical production of its kind in the nation.
Yeah.
Now, isn't that an amazing thing to think about? Which, of course, now we're thinking that maybe that Lost Colony wasn't so lost. And the only reason it got lost is because the expedition that's supposed to come back gets stuck in England because the Spanish Armada is attacking England. So it takes them 2 years to get back.
Mm.
And that's when they come back and see only that one word, Croton, which I always thought referred to some kind of a potluck, and it was croutons.
Yeah, croutons, right? Like, we bought some amazing.
Bring something with you.
Maybe it's a shopping list. Right. Like, we're going to have a potluck, and it's like, we got all the salad fixings. We just need some Croatoans, and we'll be all good to go.
If you talk to some of the folks in the Outer Banks, they would say that some of those descendants intermarried with the Native Americans,
right,
and that they are descendants of some of those early settlers, which is
would say that, wouldn't they?
Of course. Hey, they're at the beach.
I mean, it's true, it's probably, but yeah.
But that's kind of cool stuff that's happening too. That's just on the 4th. And then we have some things happening. Like, this is just
Go back, because James Bailey was born on July 4th.
Yes.
P.T. Barnum was born on July 5th, which...
Yes, isn't this
I'm
amazing?
Sure Bailey never let him live down.
Yes. I think that's just amazing that these two guys, they get together, they form this long-lasting circus that is just... recently closed, which is, maybe we'll see it come back every so often, but...
Like the Twinkie.
Well, speaking of the Twinkie, you know, it's interesting. Sylvester Graham was born in 1794, and he's the fellow who's an American dietary reformer for whom graham crackers are named.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, anyway, now, of course, I don't think we would follow his routine. No abstinence from alcohol, frequent bathing, daily teeth brushing. Some of this we would. Vegetarianism, avoided spices and white bread, and practiced sexual abstinence. Well, you know, some of this was kind of revolutionary, but he was really probably trying to be a health crusader.
Right.
And somehow eating these graham crackers was considered part of that.
That's interesting, because now we think of graham crackers as like a glorified cookie.
That's right. It's like, I don't think we think of that as part of the health regime, but
the health regime, we are gathered around the graham campfire. We have these two graham crackers, and in order to make them taste better, we have Ein Marshmallow and ye old chocolate bar.
It does taste better that way, too. Yeah. Well, I think that was a much more hearty graham at that point.
It might be.
It was not the sort of thing we think about today.
So, graham cracker you'd get at like the GNC or something.
But here's something cool. Now, this is Thursday, July 6th, 1930 is when Amelia Earhart set a women's international flight record by flying an average speed of 181.18 miles per hour over a 64-mile course. And, of course, she has come back into the news.
Apparently,
because a photograph supposedly found in the National Archives.
It's like a very woman blurry, in the background who had the same haircut, so maybe,
and her flight navigator, and there's something on a ship being towed, and it's all fuzzy and blurry.
It's going to be one like the Lost Colony or like D.B. Cooper or Jimmy Hoffa or one of those.
Exactly.
Like people are fascinated about it. They just, every little tiny bit of evidence, they're just going to keep like hitting on it, and they're never going to be found. There's never going to be, I don't think, conclusive evidence.
No,
but
maybe
it's
going to
the story's going to keep going forever.
Stuff.
Yeah.
It's like on Friday, June 7th, 1947, is when we begin the Roswell stuff.
Speaking of things that will never be proven.
UFO and possibly, are there aliens from a crash site? And Area 51. So, you know, these things are part of that urban mythology that we're all a part of and we enjoy learning about.
Someone has pointed out recently that you've definitely heard the number of UFO sightings that have made the news kind of go down a little bit.
Yes.
And part of that, I think, is the fact that The X-Files is no longer on the air every Friday night. But part of that, I think, too, is the fact that we've all got cell phones with cameras. So if any
Isn't
of us get abducted by aliens,
right,
we can just pull out our cameras and take a picture, but you don't see that. So interesting.
Now we're seeing drones and people are taking a lot more pictures. So it's... Not maybe the aliens are just backing off. If they, that's how
maybe,
that's
yeah.
how the UFO people explain it. Well, you know, they're just taking a back seat here. But
I had a long-standing theory that aliens were not in fact from another world, but in fact were archaeologists from future Earth that had perfected time travel and had gone back in time in order to study 20th or 21st century American civilization.
That's a credit, just like we're doing here.
Just like we're doing,
That's right. Oh, that is, I love that idea. I can't wait to see the movie. This
is just a bunch it's just a bunch of people doing their master's thesis
That's
who
right.
just come back and...
Einstein would be very happy. Oh,
you
figured that out.
Congratulations.
That's right.
Well, why didn't you come back and see me? I'm in all the books, right?
that's what they'll be doing. They'll say, let's go back and visit Einstein. That's right, or Aaron Keck. I think that would be great. Money comes
one
up.
Or the other.
That's right. Well, yeah. Money comes up. 1787, the first coin authorized by the Continental Congress, a copper Franklin cent. Designed by who else? Benjamin Franklin.
Of course.
And then 8 years later, 1785, the dollar is adopted as the unit of U.S. currency by the Continental Congress. And I wonder if Mr. Hamilton had some say in that.
Possibly.
But, you know, it's one of those kind of interesting things. You go, oh, yeah, the stuff in our pockets, that had an origin. So anybody says, oh, I don't care about this history, you say, well, then take everything out of your pockets.
Yes.
And turn off your all your computers and put away your books and everything else.
Benjamin Franklin was just a fascinating figure. Like, he's got finger in every pie of 18th century American history.
That's
like, anything significant that happens either comes from or goes through Benjamin Franklin at some point.
It really is
fascinating.
Yeah, he's very much a part of this.
And he started with nothing. Like, his son of a, like, the second son of a printing family. He travels to Philadelphia from Boston.
Yeah.
He's apprenticed to his brother, and then he just starts his own printing shop, and then he just sort of gradually builds from there. It's just a fascinating story.
Well, free press
story is
so important. In fact, there's some evidence that even the regulators were influenced. Herman Husband had read tracts of Benjamin Franklin.
I have no doubt.
It's just kind of a wonderful connection. That we have. We have all that kind of good stuff going on. And I just love the Roswell thing.
Who doesn't? We do have to wrap up here in a few minutes. So let's get to the end of the week. What's your favorite from the weekend?
All right. Well, I would suppose the 1868 July 9th is when the 14th Amendment was ratified.
There you go.
Defining U.S. citizenship and granting it to those born or naturalized in the U.S. Mm. It also stated that the rights of a citizen could not be removed without due process of law. As you know, the 13th Amendment freed anyone who was enslaved, but then, of course, there were people say, well, too bad, but you're still not a citizen. You can't vote.
Right.
And it took the 14th Amendment, took the 15th. You know, it's amazing how much time it took to do this. So that 14th Amendment is very, very important, and I think that's something that is why history matters.
Yeah, and in so many ways, possibly the most important of all the amendments, or very, very close to it, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
certainly
right.
One of the most influential in terms of just sort of reshaping American society in the way that it
and
is.
And isn't
today.
It a wonderful thing to realize that on this July 4th, 15,000 immigrants were naturalized and gave that pledge of allegiance and became U.S. citizens, coming from all over, forming that tapestry. The Great Seal has that Latin phrase, a pluribus unum, out of many one, and that defines the American experience more than anything, and that the swearing in of all these new citizens who have been vetted over many years, and the, what they came and endured is an enduring legacy to what the American spirit is all about.
There you go. Scott Washington, History Matters. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Aaron, as always.